Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Got me wired up. Excellent. Sorry, I'm wearing contacts for the first time in like 6 months, so I'm like, nyang, nyang, nyang,
nyang, reminding myself what the hell I'm reading.
Okay. I'm Dan Nalen, and you've tuned in to another sterling episode of Soundwaves from the Underground podcast, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it's one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk to the good folks behind the Beard and Mustache Championships at the Piper Down. We talk to the good owner of the Hive Winery up in Layton, Utah. Yes, Utah's very own winery. And Mike Riedel, our own beer expert, comes in to tell us the latest news on the local beer scene. All I have to say about our first story is that the people behind the Beard and Mustache Championships are lucky I didn't hear about this in time to start growing something, because I would sweep this mofo, no problem. I have a Homer Simpson beard, I can grow it in a matter of an afternoon. But I will not be there. Lots of other people will be, though. The first ever Utah Beard and Mustache Championship is going down this weekend at the Piper Down. All types of facial hair are going to be open to the competition, 10 different categories, including mustache, your natural and stylized mustaches, your partial beard, your full beard, a goatee, you name it, they're going to have a category for it. All proceeds from the event go to Needs Beyond Medicine, a nonprofit organization dedicated to diminishing the burden of cancer by increasing awareness, education, and offering relief to cancer patients. Slug writer Tim Cronenberg sat down with the Alliance president, Todd Butler, to talk about the club and the competition coming up.
Please tell me who you guys are.
I'm Todd Butler, president of Utah Beardsman Alliance.
I'm Julie Butler. I'm independent as of this moment, but just letting one kind of let you know about the women's portion of the beard and mustache competition. You don't have to have a beard to compete.
Well, how did the beardsman thing become a thing in general? And how new is the Utah Club? And when did that come into place?
Well, the Utah Club itself's been around since 2008. It's just a Facebook page and didn't become active until 2012 when I took over and we started having meetings. And the whole like beard and mustache thing and contest have actually been around for many years, and it was popular over in Germany, and then the whole movement made its way over here to the US and clubs started forming.
Okay. How does one become a member?
To be a member of the Utah Club, you can just go to our Facebook page, Facebook/groups, Utah Beardsman, MAN Alliance.
Any initiation rites? Something scary?
No, there's no initiation. It's just show up, have a good time.
The documentary Mansum, you said you've seen it?
Yes.
And you both appear to be fans of that. Does the Utah sect do bearding professionally or competitively?
It's competitively. We're not out to go out and compete and make money off of it. It's just go out, have fun. It's a brotherhood and a sisterhood, it's fellowship. Go hang out with friends you haven't seen in months that live on each end of the country and people from around the world. We've met many people from all over the world.
Nice. Just in Utah or?
No, all over the world. That's one of my favorite things about the whole bearding, I call it the bearding community. There's at least one chapter in every state, and there's almost every week there is a competition. You go and you meet and you go there and it's almost like, oh, you've got a beard, hey, you're awesome, you know, automatic in with everybody. And everybody's all good friends, you know, get together, have fun, and keep it up with each other on Facebook. And it's national and worldwide. Like, there's going to be a world competition here in Germany in November.
For the more professional types,
well,
I take
any,
it.
Anybody.
Okay.
So
I just heard that some people have done it for a living, so I was...
Yeah, like
Jack
Passion. He's really the only one who's done it for a living.
Okay.
But
yeah, he writes books and stuff like that to make money off his beard. And I mean, a lot of people we know and that do this are like, we're not here to make any money off of our facial hair. We're here just to go out, have fun, drink some beer, meet new people, and, you know, when you meet a total stranger, you know, we went down to Vegas for Nationals back in November, and hanging out on Fremont Street, and we're just waving at people and with beards, and they come over, start talking to you, and it's just like, you haven't seen them in a long time. It's like, yeah.
You guys do a bit of traveling?
We've done a little thing.
Yeah, we've done a little. Trying to come up with the money isn't easy, but yeah.
It kind of goes for everybody.
Yeah, but if you can come up with, you know, some extra cash to go to different competitions, like around the country.
How many members are in Utah?
Well, on our Facebook page, there's over 400, but actual is less than that, probably maybe 325.
Come out to bars and meet all the time, or is it
no, independent? Just the ones that are actually live here that are on the Facebook page. But most at our meetings was 25 that have ever shown up. Usually the average is anywhere between 8 to 15 that actually come out.
All right, so just friends connecting with social media?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the competition, and it's a fundraiser too, so let's just tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, the competition is it's June 22nd. It starts at registrations from 6 to 8. It's at Piper Down. We have two bands playing, Howling Rails and Jack Wagon.
Okay.
Just a couple local bands.
We like local, that's fine.
Yeah, but the competition itself isn't for our group to make money. It's for us to raise money for a charity called Needs Beyond Medicine. It actually helps people with cancer, and not just breast cancer, because, I mean, that's like the whole big thing is all these cancer groups, or a lot of them are about breast cancer, but this one isn't. It doesn't matter what kind of cancer you have, they'll give you a grant to pay for your food, rent, utility, medical bills, and stuff like that.
Okay.
I personally like this charity because my parents both had cancer, and like a lot of times, like, you can't afford the little things, and this charity helps with your daily needs. Because, I mean, like, the medications are expensive and the chemotherapy is expensive, but this, you know.
How are you going to keep living your life?
Yeah, how are you going to keep living your life if you can't afford to buy a loaf of bread? So this charity helps you pay for stuff like that.
It's good. What are the prizes for the winners, or is it just good having fun drinking beer?
As of right now, first place, they'll all get a trophy of some sort. Everyone will be getting a certificate that competed in place first through fifth. All first place winners will get a trophy. The men will, it's 8 men's categories and 2 women's categories. The men will all get the same prize, and then the women will have, their trophies will be different. And then second place winners in the men's and third place winners in the men's will get like mustache wax, I think some hair pomade and stuff like that. And then we're doing up to 5 places, so everyone will get a certificate. And right now we're still trying to figure out what to do for extra prizes for second and third in the women's.
How did you guys come to the idea for cancer awareness? Were there other ideas?
No, actually my friend Philip Brown is the one that I wouldn't say CEO, he's the main chairperson. He's the founder of that Needs Beyond Medicine organization, because it's just something that's been close to his family. He's the only paid person that runs the organization. Everyone else is just volunteers.
It's a lot of work to do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but I mean, cancer itself has affected, you know, our family too, and, you know, just the whole non-research side, I kind of like dealing with the more personal side that's actually going to get help, you know, with the food and the rent and stuff like that, instead of our money going to research and could wind up going to some CEO and some big monster off this building somewhere in the Midwest, and he's driving around in his Bentley, and, you know, it's like, why donate all that money if someone's going to go drive a Bentley? You know, we're out here to, people donate for a cure, but I guess the cure is a Bentley.
That's food for thought. How does one judge a bearding competition, by the way?
Like, a lot of the competitions, they'll actually produce a packet for their judges. The categories is, there's two mustache categories, natural and styled. There's a groom category, a goatee category, partial beard, freestyle, full beard natural.
And then the women's categories are mustache and beard. And that could either be realistic or fake. So
you've seen realistic mustaches on women?
Well, like, some of them will, like, dress up as men. Like, I've done that myself.
Okay.
We were in Utah Beardsman Alliance was involved with a calendar called Beards for Breasts, and they had a women's calendar, and I dressed up as Charlie Chaplin. So
that's pretty cool. But you know, like, the judging itself just all depends on category mm-hmm. that you're in.
Are the categories pretty self-explanatory, or is there something
yeah.
people actually look for?
It's pretty self-explanatory. I mean, freestyle is
kind of like, that's an awesome beard.
Yeah, freestyle is just anything goes, you know, because mm-hmm. you got Arnie Biedefeld. He's like, a lot of times would do full beard natural, but now he does freestyle, and his looks more like an octopus.
Okay.
So it kind of has like maybe 6 to 8 different, like, kind of looks like tentacles.
Strands.
Yeah, like, okay. It's like straightened out, and then it has like a
loop at the end. Mm-hmm. And he's got a really big one of those, like, belly beards that come down to his beard. So he painstakingly, like, hairsprays the shit out of it and, like, blow dries and gets it to stick out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't yeah. move. We've actually, he was there at Nationals in Vegas, and we saw him, and his beard was like that all day. So, I styled his beard a few times, kind of do like a mini octopus, like 4 strands with the little loops at the end.
So you guys probably took a couple notes from the punk rockers back in the 80s, how to keep it all up.
Yeah, the got to be glued is actually the number one staple, from what I hear, for styling.
Really?
The ultimate, like, the free spray.
Okay, well,
yeah.
Keep a note out, all you bearders out there.
Yeah. On our pre-registration page, it has all the categories listed, and then what's allowed, what's not allowed. For, like, styled mustache, you can use any kind of hair styling product, you know, wax, hair pomade, hairspray, anything like that, but you can't use any kind of pins or anything like that to actually hold it up. It actually has to stand up on its own without any help. Just only help is the hair cosmetics.
It's pretty simple. You don't really have to cheat to win a beard competition.
No. If you're cheating, then you should have never showed up.
And a lot of times too, that it's your how you present yourself to the judges and to the crowd. Mm-hmm. Like, showboating is encouraged.
Yes.
And so.
So that's the don't be a douche rule. That's less of suggesting that you don't grow a Hitler mustache.
There's some on that in our group that had a Hitler mustache.
Yeah, we don't care what style of facial hair you have.
I think it's just like how you treat like others.
Yeah.
So that's more the
don't yeah, be a it's douche. Just the whole. That D-bad rule is just more about disrespect. Like, ooh, you have a beard, you need to shave. Ooh, I don't like your beard.
Or like, you're just growing a mustache, you're like...
Yeah, it's like, oh, I need to throw away the razor. Be a man and grow a real beard. You know, so yeah, that's...
No trash talk. We're all having fun.
Yeah.
Beard and Mustache Championships will go down this Saturday, June 22nd at Piper Down, which is located at 1492 South State Street. It's $15 to compete and just $5 to watch. Registration for the competition starts at 6 p.m. and goes until 8 p.m. For more information on the club, search them out on Facebook or visit them at utahbeardsman.blogspot.com. People who are into the old metal scene of Salt Lake City will surely know doom metal band Invaders. The group is comprised of Phil White, Dave Moss, Julie Stutznegger, and Slug Magazine's senior staff writer Gavin Hoffman. The group originally formed in late 2007. They've only changed the lineup a little bit along the way. They released their debut album, Electric Church, back in April 2010. Shortly thereafter, they went on a short hiatus, but they got back together in late 2011 and are currently working on new demos. We're going to play a song off of that Electric Church album. This is called Church Burner.
Yeah!
Raiders will be playing Crucial Fest 3 this year on Friday, June 28th, headlining at the Shred Shed, along with other bands like He Whose Ox Is Gored, Eons, Into the Storm, Rocky Mountain District, and Empire of Wales. The show starts at 4 p.m. For more information on Crucial Fest 3, including tickets and showtimes, visit them online at crucialfest.com. And for more information on the band Invaders, just search for Invaders on Facebook. And that is INVDRS. We are very happy to welcome Jay Yaney from Hive Winery here into the Soundwave studio. And if people don't know out there, the Hive Winery is an actual winery right here in Utah in Layton. Is that right?
That is correct.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. And we're going to learn a little bit about your place and a little bit about a special new product. You opened up in 2010 and you've been able to sell since 2011. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just tell us, why did you think a winery in Utah could work? How did you get to that place from whatever you were doing before?
I'm actually still a geotechnical engineer. I actually still own Y-Square Geotechnical with my wife.
Okay.
And what happened during the big crash of 2008 is being in soils engineering, economy just tanked. We went from billing $1.5 million to $200,000 in just a few years. And that just takes the life out of you.
Yeah.
And when I had to lay off my first employee, it just, my employees are my family. I know they say as a good businessman, you don't get attached to your employees, but I can't do that.
Right.
But when they just destroyed me. And my wife gave me this crazy idea, just said, hey, you know, if we ever just start a winery, maybe we could take a vacation again. And being that I'm just constantly always thinking of doing different things, I came back to her with a business plan a month later. A month later, saying, you know, if we did this, we could have a winery as a hobby. And as the economy kept getting worse and worse and worse, the plans kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger on that one. And now to the point to where after selling wine for almost 2 years now, I'm almost out of being an engineer full-time. I still get to be a driller, and I still get to review reports and stuff for the wife, who's the owner of the wife's engineering company also. But that just allowed us to just start making other things. But also, had we not had the engineering company with the space from that, I wouldn't have been able to do the winery.
Yeah.
So it gave me the space to do the winery rent-free for the 18 months it takes to build something out before you can even start making a penny.
Now, are you guys like big wine lovers? Are you people who just, you know, love to go visit wine country? Why wine, I guess?
I love to create. That's why we don't make typical wines. I've got to constantly create. That's why I've made 35 different wines since I've opened two years ago. We've been June 20th of this month will be our two-year anniversary.
Oh, perfect.
And the Stinger was our 35th different wine we've released since we've opened.
Whoa.
And by the end of the year, I'll be over 40. So there for a while, I actually had more wine labels, and I still might, than all the rest of Utah wineries combined.
Yeah, you probably do.
And it's all about creating and also buying local. And so I tried to, with what I've got, we know we have an uphill battle going with fruit wines and meads and malamals, simply because Northern Utah doesn't grow good quality grapes. We can grow grapes, but they aren't good quality grapes, and to compete against the mass-produced, out-of-state, out-of-country wines, you've really got to have something special.
Yeah.
I've always been a home brewer that did fruit wines. I never made a grape wine until just about a year ago when my dad said, hey, can you? And, well, that's probably easy to do.
Right?
Yeah. But it's one I don't sell, but I made it for him.
Okay.
And but it wasn't tough at all compared to what we're doing on fruit wines. But it gives me the ability to try like I said, 35 different wines so far that are already labeled and have been sold or being sold, and always doing something new and creating.
What's sort of the big challenge? You know, Utah, we have this reputation for being just a tough place for anyone selling any kind of alcohol, right? Or manufacturing and or selling. What are some of the big sort of hurdles you had to jump over just to get into business? And what hurdles are there still now that you're in business and selling?
We have several hurdles. One of the biggest ones we went into knowing we'd be this, and it wasn't even the state of Utah, is that fruit wines have to be sweet.
Yeah.
And our fruit wines aren't. We do a Western style fruit wine that's a dry style fruit wine. And most people, and just this weekend, had, oh, it's fruit wine, so it must be a dessert wine. Well, no.
Yeah, no, exactly. <laughs> So it's
like, come over to the bar and let's try a few.
Okay.
And so it's that's our biggest thing, to change people's attitudes about wines, about fruit wines, that they don't have to be sweet. They can be a good quality wine to go with main course meals without being syrup.
Right.
On
super
that. So, I mean, as I say, my wines range between 1.5% and 3% residual sugar, with some being dry. And nationwide, fruit wines are between 8% and 16% residual sugar.
Okay.
So it's a huge difference.
Yeah.
But you can get all the, you have to have a little sweetness to pop the flavor.
Sure.
But you don't need to have The sweeter you make it, the more you hide the characters of the fruit.
Right.
The drier you make it, the more it's the fresh fruit flavor. The sweeter you make it, more like Kool-Aid it is.
Okay.
So now that was one that we knew.
Yeah, public perception.
Public perception. I've had people come and say, I want a red wine. Well, we don't make red wines. And they just, I've had, probably in the 2 years I've been in business, about 30 people just throw up their nose and leave.
Yeah.
Well, they're wine snob, they lose out.
Right.
But I've also converted a lot of people towards wine. Now, on the state-wise, our things, our biggest things are the fees. Our taxes are the worst in the nation.
Yeah.
If I sell the wine, we're paying 17% what I call excise tax, because if they're collecting something for nothing, it's a tax.
Right.
The state of Utah likes to label things fees, so we can't write it off federally.
Yeah,
but
you're getting dinged.
We're getting dinged.
Another,
you know, if you're writing the DABC a check for $3,000 a month, it's a tax.
Yeah, right.
So on those, so that we knew that going into it, and we're working on changing some of the mantras and other things. Like, I'm working towards starting to get some legislation changed to allow me to sell on Sundays.
Right.
That's one of the biggest things. It's one of the three biggest sales days of the week. I got to be closed. But when I started the business, I also looked at knowing, well, if nothing changes, can I survive?
Right.
And that's how you have to look at it.
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know, you got to be a little screw loose.
And a lot of times the laws will change just because there hasn't been an existing business before that prodded things, I guess.
Yeah.
And that could be you.
And I'm trying. I like to shake the boat. It gives me something to do.
Yeah, nice. What has turned into, you know, over the 2 years, are certain wines proving to be way more prominently popular with people who have discovered you guys? Or what are the favorites out there?
Everybody loves something different. And what are my favorites and other people's favorites? And what was our biggest seller for one time? Everybody loves something different. That's what makes us unique, is you can come in and we always have something new and something different to love.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to a winery and I was there 5 years ago. Go back. Hey, look, they have the exact same 8 wines that were here before.
Yeah, right.
Depending on when you come during the course of the year, it can always be something different. And really, that's what makes us unique. And so that people are always looking at something different when they come in. So we really don't have anything that is
This is the one. Come Christmas time,
it's always cranberry.
Okay,
cranberry,
yeah.
Hands down, is the biggest seller. I'm even trying to get in the state this year. They want it, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to give it to you because you're being buggers to me on that one.
Right.
During this time of year, it's the lighter wines, like our peach wine. During the winter, it's our heavier wines.
Okay.
And we always just have something different, and we haven't had a chance in the state system to even get our meads in yet because they turned us down. But now that I shamed them, we took the gold medal at the Major Cup, which is the biggest meat competition in the world.
Oh,
and
nice.
So and they turned us down, so I was able to say that right in front of their bosses, going, you know what, you guys got to pay
attention.
We're
world class, and you're not letting me sell the product.
That's
here,
right. So it's one of those things that we've got an uphill battle.
It slowly changes.
But our biggest problem with the state is they're used to selling low-end, mass-produced, cheap wines.
Right.
They've trained Utahns to buy cheap liquor.
Right.
And we are. I mean, I was raised, once I started drinking, cheap on cheap liquor, you know, buy the box, buy the cheap bottles, buy those. And really, with all the taxes and fees in Utah, you've got to make a premium wine. So, and then, so when you're going in with higher end wines, it's tough to crack the Utah system.
Okay. Now, how do people find your wines? I mean, you have some are in the liquor stores, it sounds like, or wine stores.
We have 3 wines in up to 15 of the state liquor stores. They're spread around the state. We're getting it, updating our website to get them on there. We also put on Facebook. And anytime anybody emails me, we just let them know where you can go to find which wines.
Okay.
We actually had to contract, and we put out there to all our fans that we had to contract our strawberry and black currant wine since the state had to completely sell out before they'd let me reprice it, even in my own store.
Oh, wow.
So we finally did that last month, and they just reordered and let us reprice it, and today is the first day of the new pricing. So all the fans of us out there who went and helped buy that wine out helped us reprice it finally after 18 months of trying.
Oh, wow. that's good news.
But that's just it. And then, so we had to contract, but that's going back out. And then we have more wines coming out. I have 6 more for consideration at the state, and we're working on it. And I'm thinking also trying to get Stinger into the state system, but I was unexpectedly how popular it was going to be. I thought, okay, maybe a couple hundred bottles out of the winery a month. In our first month, just out of the winery, we sold almost 800 bottles.
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at a bottle right here. This is the Stinger Hard Apple Cider, and you said it was the first hard cider
produced in Utah? It's Utah's first hard apple cider produced.
And why did you decide to delve into that realm? Is it just another chance to be creative on some different stuff?
It is a chance to be creative. The first thing is my wife had an apple cider she used to love that was a raspberry apple cider. And being an engineer, I've logically stepped my way into where I want to eventually be on apple ciders like that also. But Utah didn't have an apple cider, and a lot of breweries have been asked to make apple ciders, but they can't because you have to be a winery to make apple cider because it's a wine.
Right.
Even though it's carbonated, it acts like beer, tastes somewhat like beer. Yeah. It's a wine.
It's technically
a wine, so the feds only let the wineries make it.
Interesting. Okay.
So I finally had enough people pass. He's like, okay, let's give it a try. So I gave it some experiment R&D. It went very well, much better than I expected. And the popular turnout on it was much more than I anticipated on that, too. So it's been fun to create. It's different. It's a new thing that I hadn't done before. It's wine. You always do it still. And learning how to force carbonate and do it right and get it stable and not have all kinds of weird issues is a fun step. And it also has got me to the next step of even doing sparkling wines for Christmas celebrations.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we're going to sparkle our Bing Cherry wine that we're doing. We're renaming it Sister Wives, and we're doing Sister Wives Sparkling.
Excellent.
Hopefully have that out by the end of the year, too.
That sounds awesome. Well, we can tell people they can go to thehivewinery.com and get lots of info and find where you are. They can pop in for a visit. Do you guys have visitors come
by?
Yes,
we do. We have tasting room hours from 1:30 to 6:30, Monday through Friday, and Saturday noon to 6:30, because we had so many people showing up early. And the weird hours are because we still got to be engineers.
Because you have your day job
you
still.
You got the day job.
I think all of us can appreciate that.
You got to pay for it first, so that's why we have the different hours. But every time, as long as we're open, we have tastings.
Awesome.
The only thing is Layton requires everybody to 100% ID.
Sure.
And so, which doesn't bother
people
me.
People are used to that.
you just got to get used to it. And so we let people try up to 5 wines, which is tough when you've got 18 to choose from.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, thank you so much, Jay. I really appreciate it. And everybody, check out thehivewinery.com. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week of June 18th to June 24th. Yes, hard to believe we're getting into the tail end of June. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com every damn day of the week and check out the listings. There's always new stuff going in there. I just peruse and find the highlights of my own personal taste when I rock these things. You can always put your own events in there for a mere $5 a month. You can add some quality content to your listings, but your original listing is free. On Tuesday, June 18th, Parquet Courts, a band that's been getting a lot of great attention lately. In fact, they're featured in the June issue of Slug Magazine. They're headlining at Urban Lounge along with Koala Temple and Pentagram Crackers. Parquet Courts caught my eye when I heard them compared to Pavement a few different places. I'd actually throw them more in a little Gang of Four, a little jaunty guitar rock. Really good stuff, though. Catchy as hell, second album that's out there right now. Well worth checking out. Wednesday, the 19th of June, Father John Misty, who had to cancel a big show last year, rescheduled, did a big show at the Depot. He's coming back around and playing at the Urban Lounge on the 19th. Thursday, the 20th, it's the Salt Lake City Arts Festival opening up at the Salt Lake City Main Library in Washington Square. Obviously, lots of great stuff going on. Go search the Utah Arts Fest website. Find yourself some great local music. There's some national headliners. A great time for sure. Friday, June 21st, it's the return of the Hidden Hollow Concert Series, a fine little bucolic concert series in Sugar House along a creekside. Hidden, definitely. So you'll want to go check it out online and find out where to find your way there. It's kind of tucked up there on about 10th, 11th East, 21st, 22nd South. First show, Albino Father, great local rock band starting it off. Same night, Doug Stanhope comes back to town. He's headlining a show at the Complex where he recorded his last comedy special. That should be a blast. Saturday, the 22nd of June, great loud rock and roll, courtesy of I Hear Sirens and Sound Mass, both playing at Bar Deluxe. Sunday, the 23rd of June, it is my personal highlight for the Utah Arts Festival. Jason Isbell, formerly the Drive-By Truckers. There's a great profile of him floating around from the New York Times. You go check that out on Google. If you're drinking so much that you get kicked out of the Drive-By Truckers, you're drinking way too much. And that's what happened to Jason Isbell. Now he's cleaned up with the help of Ryan Adams, of all people. headlining behind a great new album called Southeastern. Well worth seeing. Should be a blast. And then on Monday, the 24th of June, Tedeschi Trucks Band at Red Butte. You could easily label this band, led by Derek Trucks and his wife, Susan Tedeschi, as a jam band. They are a little bit of that. But they are also, Derek Trucks is one of the baddest mofo guitar players you will ever hear. Well worth seeing in any context. I saw him playing in Eric Clapton's band once at the old Energy Solutions Arena when Clapton was doing a Derek and the Dominoes thing, and Derek Trucks blew his sorry ass off the stage all night long. It was pretty awesome. So, your weekly daily calendar. Once again, go to slugmag.com every day and check it out. We'll catch you up again next week. Lightning, gone but not forgotten. They originally formed in 2007 and they are back, thankfully. Very excited to hear that. They consist of Eli Morrison, Bad Brad Wheeler, and Josh Belka. Their debut album came out way back in 2008, and they played a little while and then disbanded basically in 2010, kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. Happy to say they have a brand new album called The Unbeatable Sound of Plastic that's going to be released on Eli Morrison's very own label, Octopus Records. We're going to play a song called Pull You Out. This is Pink Lightning. Pink Lightning's brand new record release show will happen on June 28th at the Urban Lounge, along with Tupelo Moan and the Breakers joining them on the bill. Tickets are a mere $5, and the show starts at 10 p.m. Currently, there is no Pink Lightning website out there, but read about them in the June issue of Slug. Follow Bad Brad Wheeler on Twitter. No doubt he'll update you on their gigs and whatnot. Great band. Go check them out. We welcome in Slug's very own beer expert and the proprietor of utahbeer.blogspot.com, Mike Riedel, to tell us what's new and exciting, and he's going to fill us in on the Big Fat Brew Fest up in Idaho Falls. It was just over the most recent weekend before we recorded this. Mike, welcome.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, always a pleasure, of course. And, you know, I've been up to the Mountain Brew Fest a couple times. It's one of my favorite, especially compared to what the, you know, kind of the bullshit that they have to deal with our Utah Brew Fests up there. You know, you just get so much variety from around the country and specifically around the Northwest.
And that's why it's Utah's best beer festival.
It absolutely is. And it's a hop and a skip. You could really, it's, and it's pretty cheap, like 15, 20 bucks usually.
It's 20, like 25 bucks, and it's a short hop from Wasatch Front. You can be there a relatively short amount of time, and you get 70 plus breweries every year.
And they just like give you a cup and turn you loose, right? There's no like, give me a chip, give me another cup, you know, buying more little things. Is it's just kind of taste, move on.
Here's a 4-ounce cup, we'll fill it up for you.
Yeah, it's awesome. I remember setting up shop at some my old favorite Montana breweries a couple of years, just staying in one spot pretty much for the afternoon.
That's like, the best thing. You don't have to move on. You can say, okay, just go get back in line winners, and let's do it again.
Yeah, the winners tend to like get bombarded when they're announced and everybody wants to sample them, but it's a blast and such great variety. And of course, the Utah Brewers do really well up there with both their 3-2 beers and their High Point beers.
And it is a good showcase for Utah beers because it's a nice regional competition that a lot of national breweries attend.
Yeah.
And we get to put our beers up against their beers, and they hold their own.
Yeah.
Very often.
Yeah, and you get that from the judges, and you get it from just the people who are up there drinking beer when they taste the Utah beer. So what were some of the highlights this year for you when you were up there?
Well, I had too much. Let's put it that way.
That stands to reason. That tends to happen.
There were some really interesting beers. Besides attending, I judge. So I'm up there 4 days before the festival starts. And we're up there trying all kinds of different things. I had the opportunity to do experimental beers, which are the crazy,
fucking out there beers. Thing, yeah.
And I had one that was made with pomelo. Do you know what pomelo is?
No.
I didn't either. And Buddha's hand.
Is that like an herb or something?
That's what I thought. I thought it was a flower. No, they're both citruses. They're both Asian citruses.
Wow.
And somebody made a beer with these two weird citruses and fresh ginger root. And that was one of the weirder beers I had. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
But probably not more than one
try
glass
everything
good.
Everything once, but yeah.
That was pretty interesting.
Okay.
For what we talk about, Utah breweries did so well. And in particular, I'm really happy with Dave Watson over at Bonneville.
Right.
First festival out of the gate. First time having his beers judged.
Yeah.
He gets two medals. A silver for his Goldenrod Ale.
Yeah.
And that was in the light ale category. And he got a bronze for his Be Wild honey wheat beer.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, it's good
pretty
for him.
Brand new on the scene, relatively speaking.
Months
opened
old.
Up out in Tooele, but Bonneville's starting to pop up here in Salt Lake as well. You can find it a couple places out there.
Yeah, I think you can find it at Beer Hive, Bayou, and Avenues Proper has it also. And so, you know, big props to him.
New brewer on the scene for Salt Lake.
So good for him, man. Some other notable, Epic did pretty well. Their Double Skull Doppelbach got a silver. Their Mid Mountain Mild, bronze. And Big Bad Baptist, if you love coffee beers.
Oh, wow.
This is about as gnarly and as coffee as they are. That one got a bronze, and that was pretty good.
Nice.
No, I don't want to just go down a list and
we have a lot of medals.
Yeah,
right?
We have a lot. Yeah, seriously, there was 20-something medals.
Oh, wow.
For our Utah
brands. Any golds in the Utah batches?
Well, if you just want to touch on some golds, Red Rock.
Huh?
Got a gold for their Bomberg Rauch beer, which is a German-style smoke beer.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people don't like smoked beers, but this one's really nice because it's very subtle.
Nice.
And it's made in a nice
probably helped to get that gold, maybe, being a little subtle.
It does help. Doobie from Uinta.
Oh, yeah.
It's their Imperial Black IPA.
Yeah.
That got gold.
Wow.
Which is really nice.
Nice. I've been drinking a lot of that lately for some reason. It's pretty damn tasty. I'll say that.
A man with a great palate right here. Wasatch White Label. Oh. Got a gold.
Nice.
And their jalapeno ale. Oh. Got a gold as well.
I have not tried that. Really? A gold?
So, yeah, there's... Chili beers have their own category now.
Oh, okay.
Which they always used to get lumped into spice beers.
Sure.
So that's quite a shot in the arm. And if you've ever had it, you know it's a good mixture of... It's a nice... Got a nice
doesn't
base.
Kill you.
But it's got a little heat. Yeah. It's a little caliente.
I'll definitely try it. I love me a jalapeno.
Tons of beers won. Moab did really well.
Oh, nice.
Did 4 medals there. Utah Brewers Co-op did well.
Yeah. I mean, most of the Utah breweries... do this, right? I mean, there's not a lot that skip out. I don't know if like a Roosters shows up necessarily up there. But
Roosters is up there occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, it's I guess it's, you know, what if you have the time or the resources,
right,
to
exactly.
get your stuff up
it
there.
It is tough. Most for a lot of these companies that are so small, it's hard for them to like send a bunch of staff up to a thing on a weekend. And especially it was here in Salt Lake, it was Pride weekend. It was,
right,
you know, like kind of first weekend of summer after Memorial Day. So it was kind of, the timing was a little weird.
And you have to get your beer up there weeks in advance.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You have to physically drive it up there.
You have to be in Idaho Falls for a number of days. That's
yeah.
not a big selling point
so,
for anybody.
Yeah. You want to cut one of your guys loose for a day
Sorry,
trip,
Idaho
you know?
Falls. I always like, I mean, it is fun because you get all those brewers after the thing's over hanging out together with all their leftovers, usually like by the pool at the hotel or something like that, or
oh, that's a
hitting
cluster.
The town such as it is.
Oh, that's a mess, I'll tell you.
It does happen. Well, any last words on the Brewfest before we move into what's happening right here around town?
You know, I would just suggest you can, if you want to go to Utah Beer, my blog, I've got a link there with all the winners, and I suggest that you go there and at least try and get some of these beers and try them.
Yeah.
And judge for yourself, but I think you'll find that they're really quality beers.
Absolutely. Well, it's a theme we come back to over and over, is just how good Utah beer does stand up to the other guys out of state, and those kind of events definitely prove mm-hmm. it, you know, as much as the Great American Brew Fest in
right.
Idaho, or Colorado rather.
And the opportunity you have,
pretty cool.
Try a local brand over a national brand.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't drink the national, but
right.
try the local brand.
Well,
first,
and even, you know, you have a favorite microbrew from Washington or California or something, put it up against the local who's making a similar thing and see
Absolutely.
What's going on. You'd be surprised. I think a lot of people, especially a lot of people who move here and haven't been in Utah a long time and haven't grown up with the beer scene here, like some of us have,
yeah.
they might really be missing out just thinking, oh, Utah liquor laws are so fucked up, you know.
You'll find, you'll be surprised. Beer. You'll be surprised how flavorful things are.
Well, speaking of which, why don't we hop into this new brew coming out of Uinta pretty soon, hopefully, potentially.
Yeah. Speaking of really flavorful beers, now this beer was being poured at the beer festival, so everybody up there got to try it.
Yeah.
But this is called Cahoots, and it is a double rye IPA.
Okay, yeah. Not double rye.
Double rye.
Double rye.
IPA.
Oh, okay.
And so this is basically an IPA, double IPA, made with, I want to say, 20 to 25% rye malt.
Oh, wow.
Which gives it a little bit of a... spiciness, not like hot spicy, but
right. a little different from your super hoppy IPA.
Right,
things,
it's got a little
right?
bit a snap without being
okay.
hot.
Okay.
This was made as a pro-am beer, pro-am competition for the Great American Beer Festival last year with a home brewer by the name of Chris Dietrich. They liked Chris's recipe enough to go forward and enter it into the competition with all the other pro-am beers from around the country. It never meddled. But it was very tasty. I did remember trying it
yeah.
at the festival. They decided they were going to go ahead and make it. It took a while. it's barely coming out now. But it is part of their Crooked line, which is served in the big corked
yep.
caged 750 milliliter bottles.
Yeah.
And, wow. What a nice beer. It was one of the hits of the festival.
I know Chris, actually. Now, I hear the name. He's a photographer at the Salt Lake Tribune.
Yep, he's a very
talented photographer. And, Dave Watson's wife is a Tribune reporter. I'm sensing a theme of journalists and beer in here somehow, but it's a good thing. And the more of them that I know personally, the better as well.
Yeah, it's a small community and more respect.
That's right. So that beer is sort of in the process of getting its approvals and whatnot to come into the restaurants or to get bottled or both.
You know, the DABC is its own beast, and they work.
They don't answer questions.
You know, it's like they say, we'll approve it when we want to approve it, and
right.
you just have to sit on your hands and wait. So,
well, it's always worth keeping an eye on the Crooked Line section of the beer store anyway. So here's another name for people to look for, right? The Cahoots.
Yeah. So just start knocking on your winner's door and say, is it for sale yet? Because hopefully by the time that you're listening to this, it should be for sale.
Excellent. Excellent. So that's mid-June. And one other place, we talked about actually the food side of the Avenue's property. Copper Public House, if I'm not butchering that name completely.
Yeah, that's a mouthful.
New venue up in the Avenues that does some tasty grub and also is doing their own brewing, I guess. Huh?
The Avenues Proper Restaurant and Public House.
Oh, there we go. That is long. We need an acronym.
Is what they call in the industry a nano brewery, which is if Squatters is a microbrewery.
We'll and this isn't just a guy Avenues, in his basement, yeah. But it's somewhere in between.
Avenues Proper is even smaller than that. We're looking at a 5-7 barrel system, which is not too much bigger than a homebrew setup. They've got 3 home beers right now that they've been making. Their first is called the Proper Beer, and it's an English Golden Ale,
all right,
which is kind of akin to a pale ale.
Yeah,
this one is about as hoppy as a pale ale, but it's got a little lighter, brighter flavor
like a
profile.
Good summertime kind of thing.
Yeah, perfect time for this time
sipping.
Of year. Potter Spear, which is a beer made for monks. To drink only for monks.
Okay.
It's if you ever have an Abbey Ale.
Yeah.
This is a lighter version for a working monk.
Yeah, those can be pretty serious beers. Yeah, the monk version.
Yeah, those beers they sell so they can get money for their whatever charity or just to keep the monastery or abbey running. And these are for everyday drinking.
Right.
Much lighter, and they don't really have a style, but his style is. I think a little more on the Belgian dark ale.
Okay. Drinkable.
It's an interesting interpretation on a beer you may never have had before.
Yeah.
And their last one is their Sláinte Stout. Sláinte being cheers.
Yeah.
In,
right.
To northern your health, UK. Right.
Yeah.
So that's what Sláinte means. Looks like it says slanty.
Yeah.
Sláinte.
Oh, I'm an Irishman. I know that Sláinte, all right.
So and that's a dry Irish stout, and it's just got that's a nitro, which is not carbonated. But uses nitro for the gas, nitrogen.
Yeah.
Which gives it a nice,
fan.
Creamier.
Yeah, creamy and smooth drinking. Room temperature typically, is that right? Or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, but and they're one of the prettier beers, too. That leaves that nice, dense, creamy foam cap on top.
Right.
Which is, oh, so pretty. And it's nicely, it's roasty bitter, not hot, not too hoppy bitter. And they're fairly light, like Guinness or...
Okay.
Actually, it's probably closer to Murphy's.
Yeah, yeah, a little lighter than Guinness even, yeah.
Much easier on the palate, a little less sour.
Yeah, and a lot of people who are afraid of those dark beers in the summertime, that one might go down pretty smooth for them, maybe.
Yeah, those are 3 great
warm weather
beers. I like it.
Sláinte Stout. All right, and they'll be switching those up as they go kind of thing, you know?
Is that their... Rio Connolly, the brewer out there, he's... He's pretty crazy, and I know he's got a full repertoire.
Got a whole lot of things he'll probably want to try on those batches. Excellent. Well, Mike, as always, thanks so much for coming in, and we'll remind everyone they want to check out your column every month in Slug. They'll want to visit you at utahbeerblogspot.com, and also, it's the big fat beer issue coming up in the Slug for July. I would imagine they tapped you pretty hard for this thing.
Yeah. God, what a pain.
God, he's no pain covered.
They're writing about beer is never a pain.
That's right.
But yeah, we're going to have a lot of great local beer stories for men and women.
Excellent. Hey, that's how we like to roll around here. Excellent. Mike, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We'll see ya. As always, thank you for listening to the Soundwaves from the Underground podcast. And for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit slugmag.com and do it often. We're going to talk about the Provo scene next week. The food, the music, all those great things. And we want to hear some of the places you've experienced, places you want to rave about, or bands that you love from our little neighbor down to the south. Give us a call at 858-233-9324. That's our automated voicemail line, and it's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can also drop us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme music was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Main logo and art design by T. Doan. Technical design by Kate Colgan. As mentioned, next week we'll be talking to the folks from the Black Sheep Cafe, the Echo Theater, and the Velour Live Music Gallery. Thanks for listening.